Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast with your co-hosts, Gary Baker, Foster Brown, and their team of experts. Since 1998, this program has been helping people like you with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources and programs, and promoting tech businesses in our area. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program heard weekly on WJR 760 AM in Detroit and across the state on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to our show. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, and Gary Baker and Evan Brudell are in studio with me. One of our social media experts is going to be here too, Emily Hay, and we'll be talking with some folks from Inforum, a great organization helping women who are in business get started and get ahead. We'll also be talking with a granny who is not afraid of social media. You want to stay tuned for that story. It's a great one. Coming up here on the Internet Advisor, beginning of 2 hours. Welcome aboard the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, the co-host here, along with Captain Bly, alias Gary Baker, back from the high seas of Georgian Bay. Good to have you here.
Yeah, up in the North Channel. Great sailing up there. Wonderful week, unlike the weeks before. So I'm smooth sailing, except for one night, that was at night. We were parked safely in the cove. So, I will tell you that I hate to admit this, but nomophobia is stronger sometimes than any of us, or at least I would like to admit.
Explain to the audience what nomophobia is.
Nomophobia is the fear of having no mobile device with you. And I had them, but they didn't work because I couldn't reach a cell tower. I couldn't reach, obviously, Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And so I was unplugged for a better part of a week. And
so
it was tough.
There's this constant looking down with a very sad face at your mobile device, just waiting for those bars to appear.
I actually didn't have it in my hand. If I'd have been looking down at
it would have been a beer.
It would have been a beer. So, I mean, there was pangs of guilt once in a while.
And by the way, this explains why every email I sent Gary's way bounced back. His email bin got full, your inbox, until he got to a dock where they had a Wi-Fi, right?
Right.
One of the ports that they got to. Ed Riddell as well here. Ed, good to have you in-house.
I wish I was looking down at my hand and had a beer. And had a beer.
No! It was funny, because I was up in Gladwin a week before last, spending a little time in my daughter's cabin, and they don't have internet access there either. And, the result is that you spend a lot of time with nomophobia. Although when we were on vacation, I was enjoying reading a book anyway.
When I was at Port Huron, what I did last year, when I had a 3G MiFi spot, I had no problem getting wireless in Port Huron, right on the beach. What I would do is I'd take a fishing pole and I'd extend it up into the tree like 40 feet and I would get a signal. That'd be no 4G, I cannot get a signal. I have to go about 300 yards inland
before
I actually get a signal. It's the strangest thing. You'd think you'd get better signal.
What we've done, by the way, Gary, in your absence, is we've shifted things around a little bit. And Mike Brennan now is part of our program here at the beginning of the show. And we want to make sure that we get to the MI Tech News headlines with Mike Brennan. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Foster, and I wanted to say hello to Captain Nomophobia.
That's the new title, Captain Nomophobia.
Yeah, certainly like was it. That way.
We'll get you a hat or something. You need an eye patch, Gary.
There we go.
That must be it. I need one of those.
And a hat with that title on it. Well, Mike, let's take a look at some of the headlines that you have this week and MI Tech News before we tell folks about how to get it, which is very easy. First of all, automotive solar companies are scoring big with some strategic funds, according to your headlines.
Yeah, well, it's all over the place, too, but it's primarily automotive, some solar, ballpark figure $20 million or so in grants, ballpark figure going to create somewhere around 2,000 jobs, but it's spread out from Albion Township to Waterton Township to Troy, all over the place.
Mm.
So they scattered the money, but it looks like it's all good.
And what's nice about that, too, is looking at that Albion, Waterton, Benzonia,
Chinatown, Shipsan, they're all smaller communities. They're going to be benefiting from this, which will have, I think, probably even bigger impact. A lot of those communities having been abandoned by some of the suppliers for the car company long ago. Another headline, Ann Arbor networks have been seeing DDoS attacks, setting a big record.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, where somebody pings the heck out of your website and brings your website down kind of thing.
Called a denial of service attack.
Yeah, denial of service, you know, so... So, I mean, apparently it's way, way up. It's a popular attack medium now. You know, somebody does something that some group doesn't like, and they bring their site down. But it set a record for the first 6 months of the year. I think it was as high the first 6 months of the year as it was all of last year. So it's really getting bad.
Is that focused towards Ann Arbor, or was that just kind of a general number?
No, it's just Arbor Networks reporting that.
I got
it's not necessarily. It's you know, all over their network, and they serve worldwide.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just... If some group doesn't like you, they're going to go after you and shut your website.
So there's more and more of that kind of thing going on. More and more need then for good protection. We've talked about that a lot. One of the other headlines here is that Consumers Energy is being rated as a top Midwest environmental champion. That's good news.
Yeah, you wouldn't normally think that about Consumers Energy, but actually they've been pretty active in this area with renewable energy, with wind, with improving air quality, reducing energy usage, all that jazz. When they lump all that in together, they did the best of any utility in the Midwest. So that's kudos for them, right?
Absolutely. Mike Brennan, by the way, the editor of MI Tech News with us. One last thing here. It's kind of found funny. Video game and mobile app projects are approved for incentives. And one of the things that the Michigan Film Office is going to be approving help with are Santa and his elves. And I think all the children are happy that Santa and his elves are going to be getting some help.
Yeah, well, there's some funding there. The film office does a pretty good job with what resources that they do have. That's the only thing the governor and I split on. I mean, I agree with him on a lot of things, but I thought he underfunded this whole film area. I thought it could have been really, really big for Michigan, but it's still, you know, $25 million or so.
We're still seeing a lot of activity. Yeah, you're right. It hasn't gone away. It just there is an argument about whether we're really getting a good return on that. Well, Mike Brennan is the editor of MI Tech News, as you heard. That comes to you every week, and it is much more than just these few headlines we pulled out. It's news that comes from nationally level, Michigan. It talks something about what's going on with entrepreneurs. If you're looking for places to get together to network or looking for funding, very often you'll find great leads in MI Tech News. As well as if you're interested in what's going on in technology in our fair state of Michigan and around the Midwest, it's a great way of keeping in contact with that. You say, how much will that cost me? Not a dime, not a penny. Just go to internetadvisor.net. Scroll down the page to Mike's smiling face, and the subscribe button is right there. Click on that, and every Friday, a whole lot of good stuff will be heading towards you with MI Tech News. That includes a lot of audio as well. Mike, thanks so much for that, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Captain Nomophobia.
Thanks, Mike.
In just a moment, we're going to be talking with Rachel Downs about Inforum, a great support for women who are entrepreneurs or look to be that. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and we are delighted in studio with us, Rachel Downs, who is the Vice President of Entrepreneurial Strategy for Inforum. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Oh, I'm pleased to be here.
Now, let's tell people what Inforum is, first of all.
Inforum is the largest statewide professional association that is dedicated to advancing women's leadership and professional success.
And by the way, one of the things, Gary, I liked about this as I was reading the background information is you folks are putting some hard dollars and cents together on this. This isn't just like kind of like out there to beat the drum or maybe to even promote some general educational principles. You are really putting women together with people who have the money, the venture capitalists. I see the networking and everything. Your objective is to get people together to get to work and not just to kind of acknowledge some sort of intellectual principle.
No, our Engage strategy is designed to establish Michigan as the Midwest hub for high-tech women entrepreneurs. And it's really about increasing access. Women comprise 60% of the STEM graduates at the undergraduate and graduate level across the country, and yet...
That's science, technology...
Engineering and math.
Yep. Correct.
Which is interesting. In other words, the majority of these graduates in these science programs, or these generally more science-oriented programs, are women, but...
But they are only commercializing intellectual property at about 40% the rate of their male peers.
Oh.
So when you look at women who may have a great business idea and have the academic credentials and the professional experience that would position them to launch a high-tech, high-growth company, you know, often they are facing other challenges that make it more difficult for them to do so.
What are those challenges?
Well, I would say that, you know, there are unconscious biases that are at work in professional settings. I think that women still are responsible for more of the responsibilities at home.
Ah, okay, right.
And, you know, I think, you know, venture capitalists, there's only about 7% of venture capital funding goes to women-owned businesses.
Ouch.
But there's only 4.2% of investing venture capitalists are women.
And that's one of the key...
And that's a problem, isn't it?
Correct. That's one of the key metrics that we're really trying to move the needle in Michigan by introducing women, high net worth individuals, to the opportunity to become angel and venture capital
professionals. And they're out there, aren't they?
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at the wealth that has been created by being the automotive industry over the last 100 years, we have many professionals, many women who are running enterprise divisions of companies that are absolutely, A, maybe looking for a new professional opportunity and a way to, you know, leverage their professional experience to launch a new business venture or invest in other startup Michigan companies.
Out of Fortune that I just quoted, but I'll bet there's a lot more angel investors, and the angel investors are just single investors investing. But I bet a lot more of the angel investors are women because I think not enough, certainly, but more than the 7% or the 4.2% of you know, formal venture capitalists. And they really invest more than just their money. They invest in a lot of time and effort in a lot of those companies as well as angel investors.
Absolutely. Okay. And I would say that it's very similar to the work that we do at Inform around board access. We think there's a prime opportunity, just as we work with women to position themselves to serve on for-profit corporate boards, we believe that there's a great opportunity to also support the startup community throughout the state of Michigan by introducing these professionals to serve as on the boards of new startup firms.
I think that's so important. And we link off to Inform and Engage your sites, because if somebody's listening and they're saying, you know, I could help. And if they're on either side of that equation, if they have a bright idea, this is a place to come. And if they have some money and some time to help out somebody with a bright idea, this is the place to come.
Speaking of somebody with a bright idea, we have Emily Hay on the phone with us. Emily, how are you doing?
Hi, Foster. Hi, Ed. Hi, Gary. Hi, Rachel. How are you guys?
Good. Doing well. Good to hear from you.
She is one of our intellectual experts here. Emily is the person we have on very often, Rachel, to talk about social media throughout the months. Every month she comes in and gives us some highlights on things that are going on in social media through her company, which is Hey There Social Media. But Rachel...
4 years old, this month, I
that's
think.
That's right.
Isn't it, Emily?
Emily was involved in a training program that you folks had, that one of the programs you had was called Activate at that time. Emily, talk a little bit about why you got involved with that Inform program and what it did for you.
Sure. Well, first of all, anything that Inform puts their stamp on, you know it's going to be a quality program. So that alone was very attractive to me. And we all know that there's a tremendous startup energy happening in Detroit right now, but not every business needs a 90-day accelerator or even slightly longer. But something that was neat about Activate is that it was pretty much a year-long curriculum that you could spend a Saturday a month and evenings with other female business owners at different phases of their business. And we learned so much, and it was such a great way to network.
What did you take? What was like a key point that you took away from that experience?
Well, it is so common in the startup world, but you do hear the whole fail fast. So Activate really helped keep us all accountable to try ideas that we thought we had or assumptions that we made, and it really held us accountable to fail fast. And if an idea wasn't right, then there was an opportunity for fellow classmates to team up and just to think through things in a way that I personally had never before.
I've always failed fast. I didn't have to work it that quick. No, what is the
concept? You're supposed to follow that up with something else.
Oh, I see.
The success part next.
What is that concept of failed fast?
Sure. Well, you want to fail fast so that you can figure out what isn't working, and then the other word, pivot, you know, make an evolution or a pivot in your business model or maybe your entire idea. So you don't want to just spin your wheels, fail fast, and move on.
Now, Rachel, I understand that program has now changed. That kind of a boot camp experience has changed within Forum, and that you have a new model that you're using now called
Engage Masterclass. So what we've done is taken really kind of the benefit of our experience of delivering Activate over the last 2 years, and we are redesigning the curriculum to better meet the needs of women at every point on their entrepreneurial journey. So what we've done is kind of culled the best of Activate and condensed it into a four-month program designed to meet the needs of working professionals, and it guides them through the process of commercializing intellectual property, customer discovery. As Emily was saying, kind of one of the classic entrepreneurial conundrums is that entrepreneurs often fall so in love with their idea that they don't really take the time to do the appropriate customer discovery and market research to understand whether or not they can make money.
My idea. I love it.
Yes. So that is, really what failing fast means is.
I gotcha.
Going through the process and the steps to validate your idea.
Right. When you get other people like you that, you know, when they come in, you say, did you think of this? Did you think of that? What about this? How would you answer that? That's really kind of one of the values that mentoring, over and above the formal class, but the ability to be around other successful women.
Absolutely. As Emily referenced, it's really about the community and kind of the safety of having other women and people that you can, openly share your concerns and challenges, and they can provide, their best ideas and solutions.
Emily, if you could hang in there, what I would like to do is take a break in just a moment and to talk a little bit more specifically about how people can get involved in the Engage program, women in particular. How often does this happen a year?
With the Engage program, it'll kick off in January. That'll be 4 months. And then concurrently, we'll be running the Masterclass, which is designed to help emerging second stage entrepreneurs reach that milestone of $1 million in revenue.
Well, we'll talk about that just a moment, a little bit more. Rachel Downs, Vice President of Entrepreneurial Strategy for Inform with us. Emily Hay. And coming up, we got a great granny on the line. She's going to be talking about how to get media. Matter of fact, I was swamped by the tweets that she developed this weekend. All that coming up. It just struck me, Gary Baker, that somebody listening to this might say, oh no, they're talking about women and technology again. Deal with it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we don't do that more than once every other show.
Yeah. For both of us, being the fathers of some very bright women, Gary's young daughters and my grown daughters, who are many of them professionals, one's a doctor, we really value women in the workplace. And in terms of our own daughters, want them to be as encouraged as possible. So if we're not out there pep rallying for the guys, excuse us.
I also work with some incredibly bright women, too.
Oh, yeah.
And
we've met them here on the air.
If we could have a few more.
And I've got two of them with us on the air with us right now. And that is, I want to say again, thank you, Rachel Downs, who is the Vice President of Entrepreneurial Strategy for Inform, for being here. Thanks, Rachel. And also Emily Hay, our own Emily Hay. How you doing, Emily?
I'm good. Thanks so much, Foster.
By the way, how is that sweet little child of yours?
Oh, speaking of bright women. Yes, all 3.5 months of her. She's our little firecracker, and I know she'll be in these programs someday, too.
Yes, good. Exactly. Yes, she has a date to be on the air with us. Let's get back to something before we wrap up here. I want to say quickly, for you folks who are listening out there, that if you'd like to follow up with Inform and find out more information about it, if you go to internetadvisor.net, in our show notes, the word Inform, which is right behind Rachel Downs' title, click on that. It's a live link. It'll take you to the the Inforum homepage. And then also, if you want to find out more about Engage, which is a specific training program they have, you can also click on that word and it'll take you there. We have also two articles that are on the homepage that'll take you a little further in that. I want to get back very quickly before we get to an amazing lady who is waiting in the wings to talk with as well. Rachel, let's go back to the subject about the gap that exists. With all the brains out there that women have, with all the potential, with all the ideas, etc., why do we still have a gap? Gary was talking about it before in a break that way back when, you know, when we started talking about this, 16 more than that years ago, there was a concern even then about the gap of women. Why hasn't that been narrowed?
It's actually gotten worse. Yeah, it's gotten worse.
Why?
You know, venture capitalists often talk about pattern matching, and Wharton, MIT, and Harvard actually just completed a study where they had male and female actors read the same business pitch to an audience of venture capital professionals, and those professionals picked the pitch that was read by a male actor by a margin of 2-1.
Mm.
Well, maybe that says it all.
Well, I would, you know, it's really about having people understand that companies that have the most diversity, and that's in the employees, on their boards, actually have a higher, they perform better.
You had a statistic you were sharing during the break, didn't you?
Yeah.
Because it's fascinating.
According to Google for Entrepreneurs, the average age of a female entrepreneur is 40, and women-led tech companies achieve a 35% higher return on investment, and when venture-backed, bring in 12% more revenue than male-owned tech companies.
Didn't the venture capitalist read the script? Don't they get it? Emily, have you found this to be a problem where you are in your business in the sense of waking up venture capitalists?
Well, I mean, I guess I can just defer to Rachel and just say that I can't speak statistically, but it is exciting to know that there are groups like Inforum that are bringing women, not only the business owners, but the women who have already gone where people like me would like to go, and that they're willing to invest back in us. So,
and that is the real benefit for you. Well, go ahead.
I would just say that one of the new initiatives that we're rolling out is our Role Model and Investor Series. And I'm very excited about this because it'll provide women an opportunity to hear from other successful high-tech entrepreneurs that have already achieved that level of success, and then also provide women opportunity to meet with angel and venture capital professionals outside of a business pitch setting. So it'll really provide them an opportunity to understand what those investment professionals are looking for when they're evaluating.
And I imagine that kind of networking is where stuff really happens.
It's all about access.
Yep. That's exactly
right.
It.
And, you know, it is getting better. There are more women and young women in high school in STEM programs than there have been in recent years.
You were telling us that statistic, yeah.
Hopefully we'll see some increase.
Absolutely.
And Natalie, pardon me, I was going to say, that's our next guest. I was going to say, Emily, you are going to be that role model for somebody as well, because you are both as a mother and as an entrepreneur, you are excelling at both of those.
Wow, thank you. That's very nice.
You're not going to put down the reins to the company either, so we're looking for some great things happening with you as well. Emily, hey, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for the opportunity.
All right. We look for you each month. Emily Hay from Hey There Social Media, our social media expert. And Rachel Downs, thank you so much for being here with us.
My pleasure.
Thank you for having me. If you want to find out more about this company, this organization rather, you can go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and you will find more details there. Gary, we're going to move to somebody who is an amazing woman as well. And I read the story in the Oakland Press, must have been a few months ago, but it's actually a story that began last fall. And I'd like to introduce to our audience a lady that I have come to just really enjoy, and that's Natalie Yellen, the tweeting grandma. Natalie, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thank you, Foster.
Delighted to have you with us.
My pleasure.
You're so soft-spoken here, but I tell you, when you get on the internet and start tweeting, my inbox filled up.
A booming voice in the Twitter world, eh?
Oh, yeah. So I have almost 2,000 followers on Twitter.
Word. And tell the folks how old you are.
76.
76 years young. Now, I want all of you out there who are some older senior citizens out there, take note of this. This lady, and you really only began to get into this whole Twitter sphere last year, wasn't it? I mean, really get in earnest?
It's about 3 years ago.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Okay, three years. And when was it that you had the experience of getting involved in dealing with your grandson, who was Brian Grassadonia, who was involved in the Square program out in California?
Correct. Well, I was taking all my family on a family vacation. There were 14 of us, and I had heard back from everybody except Brian.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to coordinate 14 people for a trip.
Yes.
So my last resort, since I couldn't reach him any other way, was to try him on Twitter.
Ah.
So I found Twitter. I went on it. I made a profile. I decided my name would be Granny NY because he calls me Granny, and my initials are NY.
Okay.
So I found his last tweet, which was like 6 months prior, and I hit reply. And it went to @Grassadonia@Square. And when I did that, whenever you hit anything at Square, they have big monitors that have all the tweets on it.
In the offices?
In the office,
Wall monitors, right?
Yes, and one of his coworkers saw it. I just did a little short tweet. I did B...call me.
Uh-huh.
And one of his coworkers saw it, and he cut and pasted it and sent it around the company email. And then all of his fellow employees or workers, his teammates, all started following me, and they were all getting after him to call his grandma. So I developed a very special relationship with all of the employees at Square. I became grandma to all of them.
I love it.
Of course, that's when they had 30 people. Now they have well over 300.
And by the way, this is Square, which is the company. Some of you probably have run into it now when you're out, or it could be in an art festival. It could be almost anywhere, a business.
Yes. There's
literally a little Square object that is plugged into the top of an iPad, for instance. And they use that for taking your credit card information and for completing a sale.
Correct. It's a mobile payment system.
Right. Right, and your grandson is one of the people who has been part of that management team there, right?
Yes, and he is in charge of the Square Cash program, where you can send money to anybody, or you can request money from them.
So how did you end up in the Wall Street Journal?
And by the way, Jack Dorsey was the founder of Square and the founder of Twitter.
Yes, and I'm one of the people that he follows.
I love it. As a matter of fact, I understand that you are involved with his mom in a tweet-up group. Is that right?
Yes, I became friends with his mother and father. Jack Dorsey put on a program for small businesses, and in Detroit it was called Let's Talk Detroit, and I knew some of the people on the panel. And my daughter was in from California, and she and I went to the program, and I met his parents there, and I now tweet every day with his mother and a group of other women in St. Louis.
I love it.
In fact, one of my other friends that I met through Twitter, two of us from Detroit and one from New York, all went to St. Louis.
Oh.
About a month ago, I met all these women we've been tweeting with.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, Granny Yellen, hang on a second, okay, Natalie?
Sure.
We're going to come back because I want to step back a little bit further to find out how you first found out about Twitter and social media and how at the exalted age of 70, you got involved in that.
Okay.
Back in just a moment. Natalie, thank you again for joining us here on the Internet Advisor.
You're welcome.
Now, by the way, Natalie is from the Detroit area here. How did you get involved with Twitter in the first place?
Well, it was only to get a message to Brian.
Okay, that was it.
And I knew that Jack Dorsey was involved with both companies.
Mm-hmm.
So I went on Twitter to see if I could get a message to him. And it worked very well through his coworkers.
Uh-huh. Now, it's got the old game of telephone, you know, where you tell somebody something.
Oh, we were playing telephone tag, and he wasn't answering the emails. They were getting ready to launch a new product. And so he was extremely busy, and nobody in his family had heard from him.
Oh, boy.
So he was just working.
Did Mr. Dorsey come down the line to talk with him, perhaps, because of your intervention?
No, but he talked to me on Twitter.
Now, Natalie, before you got involved in this, were you involved with any other kind of social media?
No.
Now, see, that's the thing that I find with a lot of the people that we deal with on our show here, who especially are older. I shouldn't say not just older in the sense of in their 70s, but people who have, like me, been around close to that long, who maybe starting use Facebook or something like that, but feel kind of intimidated about using these other, you know, means of social media.
Well, I never felt intimidated. I just didn't want to share anything publicly.
Ah.
And that was my intention when I went on Twitter, but now it's boomeranged.
Okay.
Being on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, having a segment on the Today Show, the Oakland Press, the West Bloomfield Patch, tech news.
And the Internet Advisor.
Business Insider, the Internet Advisor, and many other magazines and radio shows that did stories about me. So,
how's it made
you sorry. You had a real need. You had to get a hold of your grandson, and this was the way to do it. So you use technology the way, you know, a lot of people get started.
Well, do you want to know how I got into the Wall Street Journal?
I'd love to know.
Yes.
Okay. When I was on Twitter, there were four men who were like in their 30s and 40s, all professionals, attorneys, CPAs, financial advisors, etc. And they were talking about bagels. They were having a discussion about bagels. So I chimed in, and I put my 2 cents worth in. Uh-huh. And we ended up having a bagel group. And the four of us, well, the five of us, the four men and myself, they were my children's age. We would get together about once every few months and have bagels and do some brainstorming and socialize. And one of the men had gone to school with Katie Rossman, who was with the Wall Street Journal at that time. And she was very interesting, so I started following her.
Now, hang on a second. Explain to people following is, so people know about this with Twitter. What is following?
Oh, you get into their timeline and you see their tweets.
Yeah, you ask to be able to follow them, I think.
No, you can just sign up.
That's right. You just sign up. See, I'm still learning this stuff.
You don't have to ask unless they have a private account.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. So you just click on that you want to follow them. Okay. You become one of their followers.
Right. Mm-hmm. So Katie Rossman had tweeted an article about the Detroit bankruptcy.
Mm.
And I saw it and I retweeted it, which means I just retweeted her tweet.
You reposted it.
I reposted it. Okay. I had never talked to her. I had never anything. And the next thing I knew, she had called Square and wanted to know how she could get in touch with me.
I love it.
when she saw that I had retweeted that about Detroit bankruptcy, she looked into me. She saw all these people from Square that were following me, and I was following them.
I love it.
And she said, aha, there's a story here.
Aha, there is a story. And what a story it was. Natalie Yellen, by the way, is with us, and she is from suburban Detroit area. We're talking with her about her experience of tweeting her grandson, Brian Grassadonia, who works with the Square team out in California. You do something called, I'm sorry, pardon me, we have somebody in studio with us, Rachel Downs, who's with a women's group here in the Michigan area called Inform. But Rachel, you have something you want to ask.
So Foster, I actually joined Twitter last year and have found it to be an invaluable resource in terms of staying abreast of what's going on in the Michigan and Detroit startup community.
So you can focus a certain area.
Absolutely.
And keep in touch with what's going on there.
So you use like a hashtag then to do that, right?
Yeah, and you know, you start following different stakeholders throughout the community, and that way you kind of always know what's going on. There's different events, you know, startup competitions, meetings.
Excellent. Excellent. So it's
very informative.
Yeah. What subjects do you follow?
Well, at the beginning, I was following mostly travel sites.
Okay.
But then I started following Stephen Clark, who's a broadcaster here in
right.
our area.
Right, a newscaster here in Detroit area, yes.
Yeah, and he has the back channel.
Yes.
And I started following the people on the back channel, and we do tweet-ups every few months.
Now, the back channel, if I'm not wrong, we did a program on this, I think, one time.
Right.
And talk to Stephen about it.
And so the back channel, let's have Natalie explain it.
Yeah, what is the back channel?
Well, it's an interactive news broadcast where he will tweet with us during the broadcast, and we'll tweet with each other, and we'll discuss the stories that he's talking about.
I love it.
It's hard to believe that he jumps in once in a while when he's actually on the air, right?
He does.
He does look amazing.
He can do that. I can't walk and chew gum sometimes at the same time. I don't know how he does it, but that's
so
great.
Foster, there's your challenge.
That's exactly it.
The walk and chew gum part?
Yes, the walk and chew gum part. Definitely. Now, you were involved in things called tweet-ups, right?
Yes, these are meetings that we have. We put out a post. We're going to have a tweet-up. Somebody's in charge of it, or a couple people. We pick a restaurant. We pick a day and a time. And we usually have about 30 people that join us. And you get to meet the people that you're tweeting with.
Rachel, I think it would be great, for instance, for entrepreneurs, right, for those opportunities, too.
Absolutely.
Exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
But see, if I met you, now what's your handle? What's your Twitter handle?
Granny NY.
Oh, you told
Granny
us
NY,
that.
That's
guys.
Right.
So I'll
right.
have
at
now,
Granny NY.
Now, so you know, do you have like name tags so people get to know you by your Twitter handle?
We only did that at the first tweet up. After that, everybody knew each other.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
And if there was somebody that you didn't know, you just went up to them, introduced yourself, and asked them, you know, who they were.
Oh, Natalie, this has been delightful talking with you, and thank you so much for the short course in Twitter.
You're very welcome.
I've learned a lot myself, and you certainly, I think, have been a great example of how you're never too old to learn something new and to really enjoy it as well. I'm so glad that you've enjoyed that and share that enjoyment with us. Natalie, thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
All right, that's Natalie Yellen. You can, by the way, find out more about the story about her in the Wall Street Journal, etc., by going on to internetadvisor.net, clicking on the picture of Natalie, which is right there. Grandma gets social media with a passion. Rachel Downs, thanks so much for being with us. It's been
my
delightful
pleasure.
Having you with us. And you'll
thanks
find out more
me.
About Rachel and Emily Hay and the programs around Inform there on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. All righty, here's the phone number again, 800-859-0957. We're going to take a quick break as we step out for the news, and you get right now on the phone, and we'll be with you.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at www.internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details. Don't forget to look for us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor. Hi there, Foster Brown. It's the second hour of the Internet Advisor. That is your hour. That's the time when we answer your questions. How do we get those questions? Well, you give us a call right now. We are delighted to be able to be available to you right now. Gary Baker and Ed Rudell, our tech experts in here, myself, Foster Brown, helping as well. Here's the number, 800-859-0957. First come, first served. Lines are open, 800-859-0957. Thank you, folks, for joining us here on this second hour of the Internet Advisor. If you have a problem with a computer right now, with a printer, with getting on the Internet, or getting around it, something's not working right, and you've been frustrated, and you've been trying to get it fixed, you can't, we have got some folks in the studio right now who have time and time again proven that they can give you help to get back on the Internet, get back on the horse after you've fallen off. And that's Gary Baker and Ed Rudell, who are in studio right now with me, Foster Brown. The way that you get that question answered is simply by calling us at 800-859-0957, like Tom from Metamora. Hi, Tom. How you doing? And welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Just great. Thanks a lot.
How can we help you?
I have a Brother wireless printer. Actually, I have two Brother wireless printers.
Mm-hmm.
One is where I have Internet connection, and it works just fine.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is here where I have no Internet connection. I would like to be able to use it with my computer and my iPad and iPhone.
Okay.
But I don't know how to connect wirelessly without an internet connection.
Now, tell me, Tom, you say it does not have an internet connection. What do you mean that it does not?
I don't have any internet access here.
Okay, so step back again, because you described one printer you have which has internet access. Where is that?
Which, Frankenmuth.
Oh, I see. It's someplace else. It's not
someplace else.
Good. Suddenly, I was picturing your house with two zones in it: one that had internet and one that didn't. So the one in the one in Frankenmuth does have internet, right?
Yes, and that printer is the same one as
same
model
kind.
As the one
right,
here,
exactly.
And it works fine.
But the printer that you have at your house now, which is south of there, near Metamora, right?
Makes a great scanner.
Makes a great scanner right now and copier, but is not able to be hooked up wirelessly to the other devices, and that's what you'd like to do. You'd like to be able to print
that's
from
what
your
I'd
iPhone.
Like to do.
Okay, Ed, thoughts?
You know, I'm not sure how he's going to get it to work without at least a wireless router at home.
Okay,
or a computer
that
you can
connect. I asked someone about a router, and they said you can't connect internet, which didn't make a lot of sense to me. But
Tom, excuse me, say that again because you broke up and maybe the phone connection.
I'm sorry, I was told that if I had a router connected to it, it still wouldn't work unless the router was on the internet.
Yes, it has to have an internet connection.
Well, no, not necessarily.
Oh, okay. Sorry, pardon me.
I had routers before that did not have internet access. There's two ends of a router: the part that connects to the internet from your internet service provider, mm-hmm. and the other end of the router that gives out addresses to all the local devices: your home computers, your iPads, your PCs, and your wireless printers.
Okay.
And what you can do is set up a little wireless network amongst yourself, but none of them have internet access. Basically.
Oh, wow.
But they all have local area.
Access. Thank you. Yep, they all have local access.
So it's a LAN that you set up?
It's basically a LAN and a wireless LAN.
That's fascinating.
So, I mean, LAN is LAN,
right.
Local
Area Network.
Area Network.
Right.
But some of the iPad applications will not work because, and even your HP ones, because they rely on basically emailing the you know, whatever you're trying to print to the printer, which does require internet access. But if you have if you could find an application that will, and possibly Brother provides that allows you to type in the
IP,
like even a static IP address for it, or just natively goes out and scans your local area network or your local network for a Brother printer to see if one responds. It's like almost like a ping, but it's a proprietary. Oh boy, say that again.
A proprietary
ping, where it goes out there. Hey, is there any Brothers out there? Basically, is what it says.
Right.
And if I had an HP printer or an Epson printer or a Sony printer, which I do, and when you download their little apps. Because I use mine sometimes offline when I didn't have wireless internet over the Christmas break, I still could print. And I just basically, it says, it was a Samsung printer. And basically, are there any Samsung printers in the area? Yes, there is. And it went right to the printer because they all worked over the local area network that I have. And now remember, what I had to do with my printer, though, is you can statically define your address. Remember, every time you power up a device, it's usually given an address of like 192.168.1.100, and then next device gets .101, and next one is 102 and 103. And what happens is that whenever you have a power failure and they turn off and they come back on, they say, okay, we're everyone, musical chairs, we're all getting new addresses. Okay? That's what happens. And then all of a sudden you lose the ability to print. Well, what the manufacturers from Sony, Epson, HP, Brother, is that's why they created these little devices. They go, is there a Brother's printer out there? And what's your address? And they do a little bit of handshaking beforehand. Okay, I gotcha. There you are. Let me print to you.
Great.
So, yeah, you should be able to do that.
So, Tom, one other way you might be able to do it, if it won't find it automatically, is go to the printer and look up, and you'll have to play around. I don't know exactly the commands for a Brother, but you can find the IP address for that Brother printer.
Yes.
And then you go ahead and you manually set it up on your computer to go to that IP address. And that may help it help
you. Oh,
you're
like printing the printer configuration page might tell you that information.
Yes,
as well.
Right. Would.
So get it working from a local PC first, and then try the other peripheral devices, the tablets and the phones.
So when you say get it local, so you mean that, for instance, the hardwire the printer to a local PC?
Sometimes that's easier. Now,
it is much easier.
The recent ones you don't need to, but the early wireless, sometimes you had to set them up wired first and then remove
and
the
then
wire.
Do that. Okay, Tom.
Good point, Gary.
Great.
You got a number of ways of trying it out there. Thanks very much. It was kind of a challenging call, but a good one to start things off. So that's how it works, folks. You give us a call. We'll put our experience and brain power to work to help you. But we got to get you calling us at 800-859-0957. You're up next. It's time to take care of some of your problems. That's what we're here for. The doctor is in. The shingle is out. 800-859-0957. By the way, for this program and then for the month of August, you'll be able to get a hold of us live. And after that, with Michigan State University football season starting up, it'll be email that will be the way that you'll connect with us. Now, the folks who are our affiliates, you folks, anytime can get hold of us through email, and we're delighted to have that. But the unique thing that's going on right now is that if you have a question about your computer, it may be about the operating system, it may be about hardware. You just heard a conversation, for instance, about printers and about something I have never learned before, which is using a wireless network without the internet for your printer. That's the kind of advice you can get here, and it comes from years of experience that both Gary and Ed Rudell, who are in the studio here, have, and some that I bring to it as well as I fumble along with things.
Well, the reason that we have so many answers is we've made those mistakes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I've got to tell you, Ed, I was telling you a little as we were writing in today, Gary, that I learned about power connections inside of a desktop computer. I didn't know this. Some of you may have opened up your desktop computer, and you may have had to replace the power supply, which I did on Jenny's desktop a while back. I didn't realize when I did it that there are two different kinds of power connectors in there, Ed.
Well, there's more than that.
Well, more than that, pardon me.
There's four, but...
The two that I refer to now as one is the IDE power supplies.
Those are the old-fashioned ones.
The old ones, they're kind of like, they got three prongs in them most of the time.
Those are actually newer ones.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But yes, that's one type.
Okay. You got that type. And then there's the SATA power connectors, which usually are flatter, right?
Yes.
Like black and flat. Well, the DVD drive in my wife's computer runs on one of those SATA power drives. I had not connected it.
Oh, so because when you replaced your power supply.
When I replaced the power supply.
You connected everything up, and you're like, you're good. You closed it up and never realized that your DVD was never powered up.
And when I went to put a DVD into it to get the drivers for a new internet wireless connector there, I couldn't get it running. So I opened the box up and looked in, and sure enough, I had not gotten the right connector. So now I know the difference between the two of those.
So did you take the connector off the hairdryer like I told you?
No.
So that would have worked.
Oh, really? No kidding. Oh, my goodness. All right. We've got Ben calling us from Rochester Hills. Let's get out there and see if we can help him with his problem. Hi, Ben. Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hi. How you doing?
Very good, sir. Hey. What can we do for you?
I've got a software program called Direct Connect Plus. Mm-hmm. And it's actually called DC++.
Mm-hmm.
I switched to Ultra TV with WoW,
mm-hmm.
and I can no longer run it in active mode. I can run in passive. I share old-time radio programs.
Yeah, yeah.
30s through the 60s.
Yeah.
And it's just a file-sharing program is all it is.
Oh, okay.
But for some reason or other, I can't get it to accept the channels that I need open.
Oh, you mean like the port numbers? Because usually a lot of these programs for sharing, like torrents, require specific port numbers. And have you called? I mean, so there's probably nothing illegal about this because most
of
the software
copyright.
Is all copyright and it's public domain stuff.
Yeah, that's all public domain.
But
yeah.
What's happening is probably your new internet provider is blocking those ports. So the only thing that has changed is your internet service provider. Did they give you a new wireless router or anything along those lines?
They gave me a new modem when they when they gave me the Ultra TV.
Mm-hmm.
I've been running this for 10 years.
Right.
So have you contacted?
And because my wife wanted to give me a gift, I can't get into active mode anymore.
Oh. So have you contacted your new?
I contacted WoW ISP. And they even sent somebody out and. Whoever they sent out says, we don't know anything about that stuff.
Okay. Was it a new computer or was it a new internet service provider that your wife got you?
It's not a new internet service. It is WoW. I've had WoW for 10 years.
Okay, so you've had WoW for 10 years.
But I got a, I upgraded to the Ultra TV.
So,
which gives me everything except HBO and all that.
So I think there's a port conflict, is what I think.
Yeah, I'm not arguing that point. Because
yeah, I'm not familiar with that. So just by upgrading your internet service package, if you will,
yes,
that it's now messed this
so
up.
So have you been able to unplug your new Ultra TV and see if it'll work?
No, it's the package. It's just that what the services.
No, that's my. They gave me a new modem for this Ultra TV.
Oh, it's a new
okay,
modem.
Okay, so I have a DVR and all that junk with it now.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I got it.
And I can run in passive. I just can't run in active. And the thing of it is, most everybody else, what that means is only active people can access my files. I can only access their files. I can't access anybody that is passive.
So does the manufacturer of the software, obviously the software's been around for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Have you specifically asked them to check if they're blocking these port numbers with this new service that you're subscribing to? And it sounds like you contacted them, but I'm not sure if they're getting the gist of it.
Well, I contacted WoW.
Yes, that's what I mean. So you've contacted WoW. They're saying, boy, no, we don't block those. And they sent someone to your house, and the person they sent said, I don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, everybody said that so far.
Okay, but basically, you know? It's just a file sharing program. Now, if you were doing torrent, pretty much that's that 19-year-old snot, you know, his kid they sent to your house that's going to fix your cable. I bet you he'd know how to fix a torrent. You
well, know. I don't have a problem with torrent.
What is the software again that you're...
DirectConnect Plus.
But it's called DC++. I'm looking it up myself, and
okay.
I'm also seeing one of the headings that I saw on this was DC++ connection issues on my new hub. So somebody is
you know,
having...
You know, so issues. It's quite possible... Have you ever purchased a wireless router? Let me ask you that question.
I mean, you're running a Linksys right now.
Okay. So you're pretty sure that you're running the same Linksys that you ran before.
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure.
Same router right. that I had running before.
New modem.
Allowed me to go passive and active.
Correct.
Before I switched to Ultra TV.
Right. I just want to make sure that you did not, you know, some people don't know the difference between a router and they get a new modem. And the new modem actually has an integrated wireless router in there.
I know it does.
Yeah.
And mine does have an integrated router.
But
then what happened was I couldn't get the other computers in the house connected to it.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm. Okay.
Now, Ben, let's just clarify again. In the active mode, which means you've identified somebody else who's got a DC,
DD. Or they have some kind of software.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily have to be DC++. It could be...
something compatible.
Yeah.
And if they're active, then you can't swap files, right?
That is not true. With active. I cannot with any passive user.
Well, that's what I'm saying. A passive user is somebody who is just out there and is not actively involved in connecting.
I can see them identified here.
Yeah.
Three hubs open.
Yes, I know. But what is the difference between an active and a passive user? That's, I guess, what we're asking.
An active user can download files from active or passive.
Okay.
They get them both.
Okay. And a passive user?
Can only get them from the active.
Okay, and you've been on this software still supported, and you've been talking with the manufacturer of the software, because obviously...
No, I have. Well, I've talked to WoW, my provider, but I've never talked to anybody with DC++.
I mean, obviously you have the software. That's might where you want to go next. They may provide a tool or a feature within the program that allows you to test something.
And by the way, Ben, I was noticing some forums, and to be honest with you, what's happened here is this is a product we haven't dealt with before, and we're doing our best to pick the information up here.
And I'm going to one of the forums right now, and there are other conflicts as well as the Direct Connect Plus.
And that's what I
haven't found one specifically about that yet.
But what I would suggest, Ben, is this: since it's new to us as well, this particular issue, we'll go in and we'll do some digging in it, okay, and try to get back to you with some more information. I'll put you on hold so that Crystal can get your email address, and we'll try to get back in touch.
I appreciate it.
And actually, I want to talk to you a little bit, so stay on hold, please.
Yeah, we'll put you on hold right now, and then what we'll also do is suggest to Ben that he would go to some of these forums and dig into it with people who know that system and
that's
have
right.
a software.
As a matter of fact, with some of the other problems, that's they're going back to the software manufacturer. So
all
I think
right.
that's what he has to do.
Good. Hey, back with you with more of your questions. Lynn will be with you in just a moment. I'd like to thank Crystal Price and Rich Lisensky, the folks behind the glass who helped make this program possible. Thank you all very much for the work you're doing back there. And a reminder to you that the only dumb question you could possibly have here on our program is the one you don't ask. 800-859-0957.
I'm just thinking
can
about...
Can we have an easy one now?
Yeah, that one was a hairy one.
We did talk to Ben, and we suggested he's going to contact us this week with some more specifics. In the meantime, he's also contacting...
The DC++?
DC++, Direct Connect++. I have not found that particular software,
right.
but I'm seeing in a number of different forums, same problem with Ultra TV from WOW. They go back to the software company, get a different port number, but they, you know, that they need those ports and they've gobbled them up. So now other people have used them. There's a port conflict. They just need different ports.
Yeah, okay. I remember in the old days you'd only have like up to maybe 500, 900 ports. I mean, now you can go to hundreds of thousands of port numbers. All it is basically an additional number after the user's home address. So, you know, like 24 is for for Telnet and 23 is for FTP. And, you know, now we're talking about 32,752 and the other one, you know, for email. And so they're just making up ports. They just make this stuff up.
And what is a port? Explain that to me.
It's like adding an area code. You know, remember when the phone numbers used to be DU8228?
Yeah, right.
Okay, then they added another digit.
Right.
Then they added an area code because we were running out. So all they keep on doing is just keep on adding more numbers.
Okay. So. Hey, let's go out to Lynn from New York. Lynn, welcome to the Internet Advisor. Delighted to have you on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Yeah, you're calling for what? Where in New York are you calling from?
Well, if you went down Interstate 90, when you crossed into New York, I'm in that region.
Oh, okay. Good. Nice talking with you. Delighted to have you on here. By the way, folks, this is a good example of how we have people listening to us from all over the country on the Internet during our show when it's live. And delighted to have you with us. So, Lynn, what can we do for you?
Well, I got a conundrum.
Okay.
Kind of like your last call, only different.
Okay.
Okay, we're ready.
No easy questions this week, all right.
A little tighter. Anyway, as I've told you guys before, I'm visually impaired.
Okay.
So I listen to tons of internet radio.
I bet you do, yeah.
All over the country, as far as that goes, in some cases all over the world.
Sure.
But mostly around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm sure some of you at least are aware of, that Clear Channel and iHeartRadio have come to be in, well, iHeart in recent history.
Yes.
Well, what has happened, I got four Wi-Fi radios in the house because I use it here. I keep one in the bedroom, one in the living room, one downstairs, so on and so forth.
Yes.
Anyway, I have lost in the last two weeks... five of my main stations because apparently iHeart has stripped them from Receiva's, the server that Receiva uses, which all of these Wi-Fi radios, doesn't matter, well, I think all of them work through Receiva, which is in Great Britain. So whenever you fire up one of those radios, they check in with a server over there in England.
Okay.
And that's where you get your addresses and so on, so you can put them on the radio.
Yeah.
Anyway, apparently Clear Channel and iHeart, I guess because of iHeart, have stripped their part of the stations out of Receiva. Receiva cannot update the addresses anymore.
Oh, wow.
And so I have lost all, well...
A lot of your radio stations.
Most of the ones that I really like.
Now, do you think this is intentional or this is accidental? Is it a royalties thing?
No, I think it's an advertising thing in that they want, because you can get them on a computer yet, but they're displaying advertising there, you know.
So you're receiving these internet radio stations directly through this internet radio?
Yes.
Now, and these internet radios are all configured to use only one company to refresh all of the station information,
that's
Receiva
that
in Great Britain.
Receiva.
Okay, so is it possible that, is Receiva still in business?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
In fact, they've actually grown in, within the last year, because there's another company come up with, I can't think what the name of it is now, with different radios, and they are putting other services on, but iHeart's not one of them.
I think
iHeart is limiting it. They want you to, maybe they got a deal going with the smartphones. I don't know,
because you
can get them that way.
Yeah. How does the internet get to these radios? Do you have like a hub in the house?
Well, right off regular, you can use a wired or a wireless router. And
okay,
if you're using wired, I use all wireless because I've had so much trouble with lightning coming in on the phone line.
So you have an internet connect. You have an internet connection coming to your house. It comes into a wireless hub, and then from there, it's distributed to these radios, right?
Right.
And these radios are all set to phone home to get to the wireless updates on what's available on all these stations. And for some reason, Riva is not being provided.
Receiva, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, Receiva is not. It's not getting the updates anymore, or is being blocked from getting them.
They're not allowed. My understanding, they're not allowed to. They got them. They can find them because they can go to WJR, find your streaming address,
right,
and they could put it up. But they are not allowed to do that anymore.
So like a cease and desist, probably, or something.
That's interesting. I'm receiving. It's funny. I had never known about this Receiva. We're learning all sorts of things today. Receiva Internet Radio. Matter of fact, gone online and I find it there.
Most of the radios, in fact, as far as I know, all of the Wi-Fi radios work through that.
Mm-hmm.
I may be wrong on that. I may be short on knowledge, but I know all of them I have do.
Yeah, it says that Receiva brings the world of internet radio into your home. They provide access to an extremely diverse range of internet radio stations from around the world, with broadcasts from nearly every country on the planet. Radio stations are indexed and can be searched by genre, the type, or the company, country. They also provide live and on-demand content, great for getting perspective on current events, etc., etc. They also sell a very quaint Wi-Fi radio, which allows
you... Is that Woody?
Yeah, that's it. I wonder what that is. Hang on a second. I'm just looking at myself. What's fascinating about this is... It doesn't show me what the radio is. But essentially, I guess, Ed and Gary, it sounds like for Lynn's sake, what we've got to do is finding a way of him getting a different source for his internet signal.
There's got to be a workaround, I can figure out.
Yeah.
I'll run this by you. If I got an old smartphone that was no longer in service that had Wi-Fi on it, then I think I could bring it in by Wi-Fi off the routers and kick it back out to my radios by the same Wi-Fi and use the so-called dead smartphone as an interface between the two.
Well, you know, you'll probably be able to use the old smartphone to receive the radio or the stream using the application. I don't know how that smartphone would then rebroadcast it to your units, because it sounds like your wireless network radios are proprietary and they're not programmable.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you could find a way of reflashing them, you know, there's lots of hacks on the internet, and it's possible that the vendor... like someone out there has probably created a different additional software that allow you to flash your wireless radios, if you want to call it your network radios, so that it'll have the ability to search other providers.
The only thing is, my radios, three of them are C. Crane, and he's not going to do anything. He's not going to interface with me on that because he's going to put himself subject to a lawsuit.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to find it or find somebody that knows independently.
So if anybody is listening out there that wants to help us find this, Receiva is Reciva.
Yeah.
And it looks like iHeartRadio has been dropped from the Receiva database, but I can't tell why yet. Looks like people are guessing that it's what we've been guessing, what you guessed, Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't appear in what I've seen so far that anybody really knows that. And I've not been able to find out.
Yeah, a lot of speculation and rumors.
Just,
Yeah. So that by the way, with these communication companies, this often happens. They're buying and selling radio stations. We're part of a massive network that consolidated stations, excuse me, and changes formats, et cetera, et cetera. So am I right, guys, that the key here would be for Lynn to find a different way, let's say with a basic computer, to go out on the internet and connect?
Oh, he said he could do that. He said he could do that with a basic computer, or he can use a phone that's not used anymore, and he can listen to it. The thing is, he wants his wireless radios.
Yeah, because appliances.
There's another app. There's another app called Screamer Radio that lists hundreds of the stations in each genre that seem to have been dropped by Receiva.
Lynn, we're going to put you on hold
so
again.
Let me do some more research,
and we'll do some more research on this and get back to you in just a moment. Thank you so much for joining us during this program. It has been a strange one, guys. I can't remember another program we had recently where we've had two really hairy questions. Folks, we have a little bit of time until the end of the show. If you have an easy question, we'd love to take one so we can go away feeling like we can answer some questions. We know we do.
Or if you have an answer.
Oh, yes, have an answer to either one of those ones. 800-859-0957. By the way, next week we've got a great program coming up with a group of guys called IT in the D. They are going to be more fun than a barrel of monkeys. These guys do a weekly program on a podcast, not on a radio station. You won't catch them on a radio station anywhere unless they happen to be broadcasting the signal from radio programs around the country. But they have a great show called IT and the D, and we're going to have them in the studio. And they're just crazy. A great barrel of monkeys. I listened to a podcast the other day, and they are just wild. And I want to share, I want you to share an email and a response that you gave to a question, because I think it is so important.
Yep, and you're right, because I've seen this a dozen or more times.
And we talk about malware bytes being the answer to everything.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not. And here's the question. I have Erwin that asked me this question today, and I responded. And might I say, since I've loaded the email on my Samsung phone, that I can do the voice responses, and I don't have to type as much. So you expect lots of long emails with great descriptions. All right. So all right. Basically, he said, I downloaded the free version of Malware Bytes and had several run errors during the process, but it finished. When I try to run Malware Bytes, it will not open. I have uninstalled it and reinstalled it and downloaded it several times. Please help me. And when I run into a problem where I've attempted to download an antivirus program or anti-malware like Malware Bytes and it fails, it appears to download, but when you run it, you get runtime errors. That to me is there's one of two things. Either you have disk errors, three things. Disk errors, corrupted download cache, but more than likely you have a virus.
Yes.
And the viruses will prevent you from running something that
downloading and installing or running.
Yep, downloading, yep, and preventing you from running a utility that will potentially remove it. This malicious software that's on your computer, some of them are intelligent enough to realize, and they'll have a list of keywords like Norton, McAfee,
In other words, they recognize the good guys and block them. Yes. So, folks, what I wanted to add to tell you was, if you're having trouble either installing getting errors with a program like Malware Bytes, which you know is good for getting rid of this kind of stuff, there's a very good chance that you get a virus at work in the system. And then, as Ed said to our listener, you go into safe mode if you're on a Windows program. And in that safe mode, then you install Malware Bytes.
Safe mode with networking.
With networking.
Yep. If you can, you can also download it onto another home computer.
Right.
Yep.
And then that way.
Yep.
That okay. Way. You know what happened? All of a sudden, we got three people who are very interested in getting some help. So let's get out there. Claude.
How you doing?
I'm doing very well, sir. What can we do for you?
Well, I just got Comcast Internet installed. I got the 105 megabyte package.
Okay.
And when I go to like any of the major speed test sites, such as like speedtest.net, speakeasy.net, I get about 50, 60 megabytes when I download.
Yeah.
I call Comcast up. You know, they say, well, you got to go to our website and test the speed. of course, I get the, I get like 160 and I get 120 down.
Yeah.
And the question really is, am I am I actually getting 105? It seems like I'm getting like 105 megabytes of their servers, but then when I'm going out on the internet, I'm actually getting like the 60 meg. I'm just wondering if it's worth it to keep it up to 105 or maybe even just go down to their 50 or their 25 meg package and save some money.
That's a great question.
Yeah. So none of the speed tests are accurate. They're all relative sometimes. And what happens is you go out to a particular server, right, and it will tell you how long it takes to get to that server.
Mm-hmm.
But the servers are all different places on the internet, and they
exactly.
all and everybody has a different route to any site. So some sites you might go to very, very quickly, and other sites might take a little longer.
And with speed tests, for instance, they show you where it's going, where you're
right.
pinging. You know, so for instance, Comcast may have you pinging some places real close by.
Yep.
Yeah, like there's servers locally here in the metro.
And that's,
exactly.
and that's the
area.
Only thing they can control.
Yes.
And they can't control the rest of
that. And when you're on the internet, Claude, you're going all over the place for servers.
I wonder if that happens if you tried pinging Netflix, what would happen?
So what your question is, do I need a really fast, let's call it a last mile, right? It's more than a mile, but the last mile, the last link to you.
Yeah.
Or am I constrained somewhere else? And if I
exactly.
don't go really fast here, will I notice the little bit of difference? I really can't tell you. I think internet speed is a little bit like buying an airplane. You know, you can never go too fast, but you have to balance that with the cost.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you just don't think that little bit of extra speed, you know, in that last mile is worth it, because you're constrained by the rest of the internet somewhere, eventually it will be, right? Whether it is in your location at this time, and then also Comcast uses a shared connection.
Right.
So sometimes of the day or night when your neighbor's not on it, you're going to be really fast. But if he's on it downloading a movie that he's watching from Netflix, it's going to slow down.
So, Claude, I would jump in and say, I don't think that you're necessarily, when you pay more money, getting much faster speed, because there are a lot of other variables that Comcast doesn't control,
right,
which is Gary talking about.
That last mile.
The last, you know, they and other people on the system, and then where you're going out for your server. So I don't know that you're really going to get that much better performance.
Right. Well, you know, one thing that I have a guy at work, Jim, and him and his neighbors are really big into gaming.
Oh yeah,
and they'll set up gaming servers.
Last mile, you want it fast,
and they're within about a square mile of each other, and I swear the man doesn't get any sleep. But they've upgraded to that 150 because they know that within their neighborhood they're cooking.
Okay, within their neighborhood, but then if you're going beyond that, Claude, I don't think you can get that kind of guarantee. Thanks so much for that, Claude. I'm going to have to move on quickly because we've got a lot of people calling in right here at the end of the show. And Scott in Pontiac wanted to get out to you. How can we help you, sir?
I have a kind of simple question, I guess.
Good, we like those.
Go ahead.
How do I know if there's a keylogger installed on my computer?
Okay, a keylogger, by the way, folks, is somebody installing a piece of software that will record the strokes that you make on the keyboard and send the information to them. That's a keylogger, basically.
Right, and there's good reasons for having those. Well, I mean, I actually put a keylogger, I was asked by a parent to put a keylogger on his daughter's computer because she was underage and she was doing social media.
Yeah.
And Twitter. And he told her that he was doing this.
Okay.
And so she knew, and he just wanted to have that ability to monitor and control.
Right. And have her know that.
Right. But that keylogger, when they ran, at
so
the time,
how does
it
he
was.
Know this?
Huh?
But, how does he know if he has one?
Well, you can run an antivirus, anti malware, and, like Malwarebytes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go.
It should pick it up.
It should pick it up. And I'm trying to think of the other one, and I'm just. Super Anti Spyware also does that. Now. You know, and I'm not sure about legitimate ones. So if you have
Malwarebytes, will pick it up. Is that what you're saying?
It'll pick up many of
and
them.
And super anti spyware is another one that is a very good software for picking up.
Super anti spyware.
Yeah,
and you can get those all from the InternetAdvisor.net website under Toolkit. Now, if they're legitimate programs that law enforcement agencies use potentially, or you know that you could purchase on the shelf. you know, you may not be able to catch that.
If it's the NSA, you may never know, because they'll catch, they won't be logging your keystrokes. They'll catch you someplace outside on the net. Hey, thank you very much.
Steve, hang on. Yeah. We'll take you off the air, so don't hang up.
Hang on there, Steve. We'll get to you off the air. Thank you, everybody. Hey, next week again, the guys from IT and the D, thank you so much, Gary, and thank you so much, Ed, for being in here, and for you folks out there being with us. Don't forget that on Sunday nights, we post the podcast, and you can get all the information from the different links in our show at internetadvisor.net, our homepage. Thanks so much again for joining us this week. We'll be back with you in just 7 days. You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and their team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or to find the show notes for this podcast, visit www.internetadvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.